We are underway with the Mary Griffith Show, and we don't do politics too much on the Mary Griffith Show, and I'll tell you why. Politics is so ugly nowadays that you really don't want to discuss it very much, but we have a obligation as a Federal Communications Commission provider to tell people about what's going on our community, so I'm very pleased to have today my guest, Dan Brink. He is a Republican running in the primary in Quincy on the Republican primary ticket to be the next mayor of Quincy. First, he has to get past his opponent, Mike Trope. So we're going to have a conversation this morning about everything that Dan Brink would like to see happen in the city of Quincy. So listen up. If you haven't made up your mind yet, it's time to learn. And early voting is already underway, so some people may have already made up their minds, but I can't help that. So Dan Brink, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. I know, Dan, you're not a professional speaker and you're nervous. Don't be nervous.
I'm fine.
Just talk to me. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about yourself. Tell us a little bit about your family, about your background, and then let's get into your political background, too, because that plays a part in your decision to run.
Yeah, I'm currently 62 years of age, married to my wife, Lori, for 38 years. We have two children, Emily and Evan. My daughter and son-in-law have two children, so I have two grandchildren, and my son and his wife have one granddaughter, and so a total of three.
Are they local? Do you get to play with them?
My daughter lives here in town, and they actually live in our neighborhood, so we get to see them all the time. My son is a captain in the U.S. Army, so he's stationed in Fort Campbell, Kentucky, so we don't get to see them quite often as we'd like. But
well, thank him for his service. That's wonderful that he has chosen that as a career.
Yeah, so he does really well, but we get down to see him from time to time. And
good.
Their daughter turns 1 year old next month, so we're going to go down there and visit and
okay.
celebrate her birthday.
So are you a lifelong Quincyan?
I'm born and raised in Quincy, grew up in the St. Francis area. I'm the youngest of eight children, so we had a good time growing up on the 15th and College area. So it was, we believed in faith. It was a cornerstone of our family, so we were members of St. Francis Parish, as I said, and we attended on a regular basis.
You didn't have any reason to be late for church. You only lived two blocks away, right?
No.
But you still probably were late. With eight kids?
We always were on time and had to bring, and we didn't go with our parents. We had to bring a bulletin home.
Oh, but, that's right.
Well, we were so close to church that Brother Martin would always call us to serve extra.
Oh,
so
yeah.
We were always walking down the street to serve the last minute.
Okay. The benefits of living close to the church. I remember those good old days when we played in our neighborhoods. Those were fun days. I went to St. Francis Church as well, but I was way over on the other side of town, right behind the mall, went to St. Dominic's School. So you and I didn't get a chance. I didn't get to go to school with all those Brink kids. We had lots of kids in our classes, that's for sure, from big families. So you've been a lifelong Quincy, and you also have a history of service to the city of Quincy. Can you talk about that?
Yes, yeah, so, I was a Republican alderman for the 6th Ward from 2009 to 2017. I believe in term limits, so I thought 8 years was enough. I think giving other people an opportunity to serve their community is important. So during that 8 years, I was heavily involved with the city budget and setting policies to set us up for future success. I worked with the previous administrations. I worked underneath John Spring and Kyle Moore, and we worked together, and we got a lot of things accomplished, and I was pretty proud of my service.
So you worked with Democratic Mayor John Spring and with Republican Mayor Kyle Moore?
Yes.
Okay. You voluntarily gave up your seat because you believed in term limits. Looking back on it now, do you wish you had stayed an alderman? You could have been more influential in these past years.
I strongly believe in term limits, and I think that we need to turn over because people like to serve. People in this community like to serve. And everywhere that you serve on the city council or the county board or the park district or the school board, everybody's there for one reason, is to help their community. And I truly believe that. And that's why I was there. And I think other people like to do that same thing, but it's hard to beat an incumbent. And so
You're in that campaign now, and you're finding that out. So if you are elected mayor of Quincy, which you have to win two elections for that to happen, I don't want to get the cart before the horse too much, but obviously you wouldn't be running if you didn't think that you had something to offer to the citizens. If you are the next mayor of Quincy, will you say that you'll only serve two terms?
Most definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
Okay. So we get that out of way right away. Now, obviously, whenever there's a primary race, and boy, we've got a lot of them this year in city government, there has been consternation on the city council. There has definitely been a schism. I say this from an outsider's point of view. I'm not a member of the Republican Party, but there's definitely a schism in the Republican Party. Any time an incumbent faces a challenger, there are a certain number of people that are not happy with the way things are going. You obviously are one of those. Let's talk a little bit about what you would do differently or what you will do if people elect you mayor of Quincy.
You know, I'm running for mayor because I care about Quincy. I care about the direction going forward. And, you know, we can do better working together. We need to listen to everyone's opinion and show respect for everybody involved. Together we can make a difference. I believe a team approach, listening to everyone's opinions and taking everybody's thoughts and considerations into play and communicating with the aldermen and the community about what's the direction of the city that we want to go. You know, my vision is to work with all the agencies involved with city government, you know, such as the GREDF, the county board, the park district, you know, the district, the Chamber of Commerce, and the Quincy Convention and Visitors Bureau, and the Okolensee Center. I really want to bring everybody to the table and listen to everybody's opinions. Everybody has different opinions. I don't have all the correct answers, but I can surround myself with good people and listen and make a final conclusion which would benefit all the citizens of Quincy.
One aspect of Quincy city government is the mayor is not a figurehead. The mayor does a lot of work for the city of Quincy, but the actual voting on legislation, for example, happens at the city council at the alderman level. The mayor doesn't even have a vote unless there's a tie. So what do you see as the role of the mayor? Because obviously you can propose legislation, which an alderman could introduce on your behalf. You can influence commissions and city, you know, city employees. But what's the role of the mayor, and why would Dan Brink do things differently in his administration maybe than are being done now?
You know, the role of mayor is for the day-to-day operations of the city, and the city council obviously votes on policies and ordinances and so forth, but it's up to the mayor to communicate with the aldermen on a regular basis to set the agenda. You know, how do we want to see this going forward? For example, how do we want to see our streets fixed? How do we want to see economic development? When I was an alderman, we would communicate with the administration, or I would communicate with the administration, you know, probably on a weekly basis and sometimes more. And we would communicate, and you know, we didn't always agree, but I always brought solutions to the table and ideas. And I think that's what we're missing today is, you know, there's a big disconnect between the administration and the city council. And I think that was proven, you know, in last year when we had a city vote on no confidence against the mayor. You know, when the city council voted to pass a vote on no confidence, I think that was telling as far as, you know, the city council was frustrated. They weren't getting all the information. They were frustrated with the insurance issue. And then actually the vote on no confidence was brought forward by employees to the city council, and they ultimately, you know, put it on the agenda and voted and passed it. That was the first time in the city history that a vote of no confidence against a city mayor was passed.
It was an unprecedented and historic event. Of course, it has no merit in the not merit, but it has no force of action because the city council cannot unseat the duly elected mayor of Quincy. So they can express very publicly their dissatisfaction with him, and I think that's when the schism really broke open for the public to see, that Republicans weren't happy with the incumbent Republican, and that's why I'm sure people encouraged you to run and to try to gain that seat for the citizens of Quincy. You talk about communication, and it is a vital thing. Little personal note. Dan and his wife, Lori, were somewhat marital counselors to my husband and I when we were going to get married. We were older than they were. It's kind of funny to take advice from people who are younger than you, but we had never been married before. You'd been married for 20 years at the time, 25 probably, 30 almost. So it's interesting. Communication is a two-way street, and you said you've got to communicate with your wife. You've got to communicate with your husband. That's critically important. The communication aspect did break down. in the city of Quincy. And people were frustrated by that behind the scenes. But how can you improve on that? Is that schism unmendable, or is that something you can improve if you're elected?
Definitely would be the first priority to improve the communication and the trust. I think it comes some of it comes down to trust. You know, do the aldermen entrust what the mayor says? And I know they can trust what I said. I will tell them all the information that I have available to me, and we will make the best decision possible. You know, teamwork always wins. No matter what you're doing, if you can bring a team approach to any issue, it's going to be a winning solution.
You will have to work not only with members of your own party, who may oppose you and actually be supporting the incumbent, but you will have to work with Democrats as well. You've talked about how in the past that hasn't been a problem for you. Do you foresee that it will be a problem going forward? Because you will, if you win and you are mayor, you will have beaten a Republican and you will have beaten an independent. And that some people will be bitter about that. Do you anticipate any bitterness? Is there always bitterness when a change of administration comes in?
You know, I'm open-minded. And one of the things you learn quickly as an alderman, you know, you may be on the wrong side of a vote one week, but the next week you might need that person for that vote. You know, there are issues that we will disagree on. There's issues that we will agree on. And so you have to find that common ground. And, you know, my team approach and my personality is paramount to developing those relationships. And I have a good relationship with anybody who has the same desire to move the city forward. You know, if we have the same philosophy about helping Quincy, how can we disagree?
Okay. I want to ask you about some specific events then, and you may have some that you'd like to bring up too. And Mr. Brink, this is your chance to tell your story, so don't let me dominate the conversation. Let's start with the riverfront. Let's just start down at the very edge of the city of Quincy and the riverfront. There are efforts underway. There was a meeting yesterday, as a fact, Riverfront Development Association met, a private group, much like Greta, trying to do something on the riverfront. Of course, funding is always a problem. What is your attitude about the riverfront, your financial and fiscal attitude about the riverfront, your philosophical attitude about the riverfront? What do you think should happen down there on Quincy's riverfront?
The riverfront is, you know, awesome. We need to develop it as much as possible. We need to focus on some private-public partnerships going forward. If you look at the Riverfront Development Corporation, why was that developed? You know, they're talking about replacing the bridge. So what happens if you tear the bridge down? And, you know, they came together and developed a plan, you know, although it's an expensive plan, but they put together a plan in order to apply for grants going forward. And so at least we have a plan on the table. We're not just sitting there idle because of, you know, the forethought of city leaders that wanted to help develop a riverfront. And I think we got to applaud them, and we need to encourage everything they're doing. You know, does the city have money to spend on the riverfront? Not right now. But can we encourage, you know, the corporation, the Riverfront Corporation, and the Planning and Development Department to apply for grants and try to get additional revenue and focus on some of the areas that we could develop together? You know, I would like to see an amphitheater down maybe like at Lincoln Park. You know, we looked at the concert series that was here last summer. That was phenomenal. We brought a lot of good music to town, and a lot of people enjoyed it. And so, you know, that was we need to build on our small successes and then go forward. Can we do it all at once? No. But can we build on small things and go forward? And I think an amphitheater, you know, because we showed last year what that looked like. And so if we can develop more concerts and more venues coming to town, I think that's the way to go. We have to focus on tourism. It's, in my mind, you know, the city, we can keep on doing what we're doing as far as raising property taxes and then, you know, limited funds, but we have to bring more dollars to Quincy. And how do you do that? You know, it's through tourism in my mind. And we need to focus on our rich history, on our arts, architecture, and athletics. That's what we do best. Our community is phenomenal when it comes to those three things. And how do you bring more people to town? You know, I have a sports background. Growing up, I coached my kids in traveling soccer, and my daughter played golf, and we traveled all over this nation and, you know, state playing sports. We spend a lot of money. Why can't those dollars be spent here in Quincy? I mean, if you don't need to look too far. Look at Rantoul, Illinois. They're doing a phenomenal job over there. And so are we behind the eight ball when it comes to sports tourism? Maybe a little bit, but not totally. So I think if we can focus, you know, on sports tourism and bring, you know, more people to town, that fills our hotels. That increases our sales tax, our purchase tax. And so, you know, so that revenue turns over fast. You know, there's one way to keep your taxes low. Increase your population or bring more people to town. You know, the previous administration had a, was it 30 by 40 or 40 by 30, 40 by 30 plan. And so that was a great start. And there's some things that the previous administration did that was successful, and we need to build on that. And some of the things that, you know, were not so much success. So I like to keep on building on that initiative, is increase our population. But on the flip side of that, how do you bring more people to your town? And you can bring more people to your town faster than you can probably build your population. So sports tourism, arts, architecture, I think is a winning formula to bring more revenue to town to help pay for our taxes. We have to keep our property taxes low.
I like what you're saying, because you said some things past administrations have done are good. I'm glad you're not downing everything that ever happened in Quincy just because you're running to have the top spot. I also like your arts, architecture, and athletics. There's one thing, though, that's very interesting about Quincy that they don't have in Hannibal, for example. Hannibal's Parks and Recreation Department is part of the city, so the mayor can direct money to be spent. Our park district is completely independent. They are known for being excessively fiscally conservative. They're proud of that to a T. And they say they don't have a whole lot of money for this, although they are improving soccer fields and baseball fields. They're doing those things. They're putting turf out. That's money that the city of Quincy, though, as mayor, you don't have any control over. What kind of partnership do you see with the park district? Because you're trying to get them to do things to benefit the city of Quincy's sales tax base. They don't benefit from that. So there's an interesting negotiation. I'd like to be on the fly on the wall. How would you come about that?
You know, I get along with all the park district administration and Mark Philpott, the current president of the park board. And it's just a matter of laying things out on a piece of paper, you know, putting a pencil to a paper and saying, hey, if we do this, this is what will happen. Prime example is, you know, the city invested, I think, $100,000 with the park district to develop some softball or baseball fields, and that proven success. I mean, that was a great success. You know, those fields are filled April, May, and June, and sometime in July, and so that's bringing more revenue. So that's a start. I mean, that's only a start. If we can do that every weekend going forward, I know the gentleman, you know, I talked to the gentleman who runs those baseball tournaments during those months, and it's a full-time job for him those months, so he needs help. And I think that we can build on that success going forward, and it's those dollars turn over after three months, and so we can see that activity. And another thing that would benefit from bringing more people to town is, you know, how do we recruit more people to fill our jobs? You know, everybody has a cell phone when they walk in those parks. You know, we can get their IP address, and then we can start sending them recruitment letters and use technology to focus on Quincy and what they can do while they're here in Quincy. So, you know, one of the things that you hear all the time is when you see somebody new in Quincy, you know, they ask them about, what do you think about Quincy? And they always say, almost 9 out of 10 times, I just love those beautiful houses on Main Street. You know, not every community has that. So that's something that we need to enhance, and I think they're currently doing a good job, but we could bring more people to town just to see our architecture. And then, you know, you look at the arts, the Quincy Community Little Theater, they're phenomenal. You know, Quincy Society of Fine Arts do a great job. There's a lot of economic development that comes through arts that people don't realize. So we need to tell our story.
Well, I'm going to ask you a follow-up question about that. First of all, thank you for reminding me that the city did participate in providing some money for surfacing of those fields, because you're right, the park district sometimes can't do it all, and they have reached out and partnered. The other thing is, you mentioned the arts. I was quite shocked as a citizen, frankly, that Laura Siebert had to fight so hard to get $25,000 appropriated by the city council just as a show of support that we support the Arts Council, the Society of Fine Arts. Do you support continued funding at a very minimal level, $25,000, in a very tight budget? Would you support, if you were mayor, continuing to fund the Quincy Society of Fine Arts at a $25,000 level as an order of show of support to help her get more state monies and federal monies to come to town?
The easy answer is yes. The more to go back to why she had to do that is that enhances the breakdown in the communication. You know, that those dollars were in the, you know, put in the budget, and it really wasn't explained why it was there. I mean, so, you know, $25,000 doesn't seem like a lot in a $62 million budget. However, when I was an alderman and we were taking cuts, I mean, we eliminated all the nonprofits. So, you know, to me, when you put money into a budget for the arts, we need to have a plan to what is that $25,000 going to be spent for? And I think she could easily explain how that $25,000, but I don't know.
And she did, and the council passed it. I think the mayor may have cast a vote to decide. I can't remember but the bottom line is you were part of the group that said, we've got a budget problem, we're going to pull back. But now, if you were mayor, if somebody could justify that they could use that as seed money to get even more grant money, you would be supportive of that.
That's what those dollars are for. I mean, we need to multiply these dollars. Like I said, we can't keep on going back to the property tax base. We need to have additional dollars come into town. I mean, in my mind, you know, there's no difference between those kind of dollars that generate dollars, like Greta, for example. They do a phenomenal job for what, you know, the city pays Greta on an annual basis. You know, the dollars that we get, the city pays Greta, you know, multiplies tenfold probably coming back to the community. So we have to invest in, you know, the organizations that support the city. And, you know, Greta is number one in my mind as far as how we bring more dollars to Quincy.
Okay. Well, I'm going to run out of time. We're just at the riverfront. We have to get all the way out to 54th Street. So I better start picking up the pace. It's my fault. But this is a great conversation. Real quick, because we do have to take a break for the farm markets, and that's hard. I can't solve that problem, Dan. I got to worry about my own revenue. Forget city budget. I got to worry about my revenue. Tax increment financing districts. Are you in favor of them, against them?
And we have three of them right now. And then they just had to, you know, develop a new one. A tax increment financing district is developed for a depressed area. So it's not, the tax base is not growing. That's why they put it in there, and that's why every other taxing body, you know, defers their taxes for that area to go into a fund to promote that area to develop. So when it comes out of a tax increment financing district, the tax base is high. So the first two are, you know, been extended, and they expire in 2033. So those two are going to go away. But the third one, you know, is still developing.
Are you in favor of them, though?
I am. You know, anytime you have economic development funds and then another taxing body defers their funds to you to try to develop an area, why not?
Okay, good answer. I mean, that's a succinct answer. Okay.
That releases property taxes.
It doesn't cost me anything to have a TIF district is the general answer. You know, it's the money that is being taxed is the people that live in the district, unless I live in that TIF district.
The money, you know, they're still being taxed, but that money's going into a fund, which is promoting that area. I mean, if you look at the downtown, you know, when I first ran for alderman back in 2009, I met with Skip Valkamp and Sharon McKenzie, and both of them were on the opposite ends of the downtown district. And, you know, I chose to adopt Sharon's philosophy of supporting the downtown. And, you know, you got to start small. You know, at that point, they were talking about the bricks, you know, redoing the sidewalks. And it was pretty funny conversations back in the day. But I think Sharon had the right philosophy as far as, you know, we had to start somewhere. And now, you know, years later, you see the energy and the momentum going downtown. You know, some people, you know, may or may not agree with me or not, but, you know, there's a lot of good people working on downtown, and they have a lot of good ideas. And if we can keep on supporting those initiatives, I think we're growing.
Wow.
And as far as you look at downtown, you know, potentially you're going to have Father Tolton's shrine downtown. So, you know, the things that we've developed so far is just going to enhance that that environment down there. We're going to have a lot, you know, if Father Tolton's shrine gets downtown, it's going to be a boom for the community.
Dan Brink is my guest today. Dan, we've got to take a break real quick. If people want more information and can't stay with the Mary Griffith Show, how can they learn more about your campaign?
DanBrinkForMayor.com, and you can follow us on Facebook at Dan Brink for Mayor.
Okay, we'll be right back. Stay tuned, folks. We've got to take a break for the farm market. We are back, Talk Radio 930 WTAD. My guest today is Dan Brink, Republican candidate in the primary for mayor of Quincy. He must get past the incumbent Mike Trope if he hopes to take on Linda Moore in the general election, which is April. We've talked about the riverfront. We've talked about TIF. And Mr. Brink says, have a plan for the riverfront. Right now, the city of Quincy doesn't have much money to put into it, but have a plan. TIF, he says, is working, and he supports it. Let's talk about streets. Now, everybody wants better streets. The problem is, I just did a little bit of math after the last city council meeting. It costs $400,000 a foot or a block, or a block. $400,000 a block to pave a street in Quincy. Ain't going to be a lot of streets getting paved. But let's talk about streets, because this is a key part of anybody running for mayor. This is what people want to hear about. But please don't tell me that you've got a money tree growing and you're going to make it all happen, because we all know that's not true.
No, that's
not true. And they
all
say that, by the way. Everyone says they want to put more money in streets. But when you ask them where the money's going to come from, they change the subject. So, Dan Brink, tell me about streets.
You know, as I campaign, you know, the number one issue everybody asks about is how do we fix our streets? It's not an easy solution, but I think the first thing you need to do is identify the problem. And by doing that, I think the last time the city's streets were inspected was in 2022. So we need to do that, you know, quickly. And I'd like to see something on the city website, a color-coded map of all the city streets, you know, green, yellow, and red. So each resident can see their street and how it's compared to other city streets. I think that's important when they say, oh, my street's, you know, not very good. But then if you look at that street, you go, you know, three blocks to the north, and that street's 10 times worse. So I think people can understand, you know, start seeing those maps, and they could understand, well, maybe my street is a priority, but it's not on the top of the list. From there, you have to have what I call a layered approach. You know, you talk about the $400,000. You know, does a city street need a new sewer? Does it need a new water line? Does its lead pipes need to be replaced? Or can we just put curbs and gutters are on the street and asphalt? So from there, you know, you develop a 3-5 year plan, and some of that's already in the budget book. However, I think it needs to be communicated better about which ones are a priority. So developing a plan and communicating it to every citizen about how we're going to spend these dollars. You know, the previous administration, you know, had a $20 million bond, which was carried over to this administration. And so they're trying to use some of that dollars. However, you know, a thing like COVID hit. So that was in 2019. So there wasn't much getting done during COVID. So now that we're coming out of COVID, you know, the contractors are starting to get their employees back and trying to, you know, go forward. So it's been difficult as far as, you know, getting, you know, the money. Some of the money is there, but how do you get the contractors to do the job?
So, and the costs have gone up.
And the cost has gone up.
We used to say it costs $1 million a mile, and now it's about $2 million a mile.
So the costs are high. So, I mean, it's a process that, you know, every administration is going to work on. There's, and including my administration. However, it goes back to dollars. How do we get more dollars to our in our community? You know, we can keep on doing what we're doing, but we have to generate more dollars in order to fix all our streets. You know, I think somebody said between $500 to $600 million he wanted to fix every street in town. That's not doable, and we all know that. However, in order to keep our taxes low, we have to generate more dollars from outside of our community. So that's the goal, is to, you know, once we generate more sales tax dollars above budget, we can take those dollars and put them back into the streets, and or hire more people to fix our, keep, maintain our streets.
All those people you're bringing in to play soccer and flag football and everything, they're driving on our streets, so if they help pay for it, That will be great. So streets are a number one priority of yours, but you do admit, just like every other candidate will have to admit, that there is not enough money currently to probably meet those needs. But your color-coded plan, so that people have better communication. We keep coming back to communication seems to be one of your themes. Pensions. I received, as many people did in my mailbox, a scathing report on Dan Brink, kick the can Dan, as your opponent said. You voted against fully funding the police and firemen pension when you were an alderman. A, is that true? And B, if it is true, why did you do it? And C, if you were mayor, what would you do? So A, is it true?
No, you know, and there's the pension fund is pretty dynamic and hard to understand. The state of Illinois passed a bill in 2011 that required all municipalities to have a 90% funded by 2040. So after this election, we've got 15 years left. So in 2011, the kind of the game has kind of changed as far as how do we fund pension. So that you know the state has a statutory actuarial that they produce every year. Then the city would hire a private actuarial. So from the 2011 to a couple of years to 2013, we kind of blended those two together. We use the Ameren money, the video gambling money. We were throwing everything we could at the pension fund while maintaining city services. So I think if you look at the CAFA report, the Consolidated Annual Financial Report, since 2016, the pension has been fully funded per the actuarial. So that's kind of, it's kick the can is not really accurate.
It's not accurate.
And
okay.
So, but it's the issue is the prior administration and every administration has worked on the pension issue, and especially since 2011, that focus had to be enhanced. We always use the property tax to fund most of the pension fund. You know, this current administration chose not to do that. And so now we are behind, and you saw the last property tax, an aggregated property tax levy increase of 18%. That's pretty high. So, you know, 5%, a little over 5% rate increase, and then overall 18 aggregate increase. And so, fiscally, the previous administration has set, you know, the current administration up, in my opinion, and based on when I was an alderman, our financial conservative structure set up the administration today, and you know where those money's gone. You know we're relying on pensions and making it a big issue, but it's the state that had made that an issue in 2011. So this, I think, the city council has done a phenomenal job as far as trying to address those issues going forward. If you look at the aggregated total amount, it was $92 million previous year, and this year it's $94 million. It went up $2 million. So who's kicking the can? You could actually say the current administration kicking the can, but there's a rationale why that went up, because it's a five-year average, and so we had a good year go off and a bad year come on. If you look at the pension funding, it kind of related to your 401k. You know, it's going to go up and down. However, you know, with this current administration, we had PPRT money that went through was really high. You know, the average PPRT money was $3 and $4 million previous to COVID. After COVID, it was $5, $7, and $11 million. That would have been a great opportunity to take those extra one-time revenues and put it on the pension fund. And they chose not to do that.
Okay, I'm going to fall asleep, and so is everybody else, if we talk about pensions one more minute. Not to minimize how important they are, but every time I talk about who you're going to vote for for mayor, nobody says they're worried too much about the pension. But you're right, it's all part of fiscal responsibility. But we're almost out of time, so I'll let you have one last word about it.
One I say is that, you know, when we hire a police officer and a fireman, you know, we made the obligation to them for this benefit. You know, they contribute the firemen contribute 9.4% of their regular salary, and the police 9.7% of their regular salary. So they're doing their job. And so now it's up to us as a city government to provide that for them.
Yeah, Adam Yates says nobody's ever missed it from our end. So that is true. The police have always paid. Real quick, you want to talk about Welcome Home, and I tell you, we've only got 4 minutes left, and I want you to make a closing statement, too. So you talk about Welcome Home, and then I'll let you make a closing statement, because it's been a delight having you here and talking about these issues.
You know, one of the things I mentioned before, my son is a captain in the Army and field artillery, And so when we go to his bases and visit him through the years, I always look at the local municipalities' websites. And one of the things I saw was they would hire veterans, recently honorably discharged or retired active duty veterans, into their city for up to 6 months. And so I would like to ask the city council to fund up to 6 positions for any active duty retired military veteran coming back to Quincy. How do we get, you know, these people back to Quincy? You know, it's a good opportunity for the veteran to reconnect with Quincy and Quincy to reconnect with the veteran. And one of the things that could come out of that would be actually recruiting for our police and fire departments. You know, some of these individuals who had those military police experience would be a great tool to recruit. And just to get, you know, good quality veterans back into our community, I think would be phenomenal.
Let me ask you to make your final plea, because every vote does count. The Republican primary is coming up, and I'm going to give the last word to Dan Brink, candidate for mayor.
Well, thanks for having me. You know, like I said, when I first ran for alderman in 2009, one of the first things I learned was you cannot do things alone. You need good help and good people around you to keep you focused and disciplined. My goal of my campaign is I will work with anyone who has the same desire as myself to move the city forward. I will treat everyone with respect. I will respect different opinions and solutions and be willing to compromise to make the best decisions for all citizens. You know, I am confident that my team approach and my personality will benefit everyone as we move forward together. The theme of my campaign is to forward together, and bringing people together. We must increase the communication with everybody so we can have a successful future. You know, we must end the chaos of the current administration and be open-minded and willing to listen to different opinions. And that's what I pledge to everybody, that I will be open-minded and I will respect everybody and I will communicate with everybody.
Thank you very much, Dan Brink. Remember, the election is February
25th.
February 25th is primary election day. Of course, you can vote early by going to the courthouse right now. You have a say in who will be the next mayor of Quincy. And, of course, whoever wins the Republican primary will go against Linda Moore, an independent. And the Mary Griffith Show will have on those people, if they so choose, to be part of the Mary Griffith Show as well. If you or one of your friends missed this entire broadcast, you may not be a regular listener. You may have turned in today because of something that you were excited about hearing. We do have a podcast, and that podcast is up and running every afternoon, usually by 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It's up and running. So if there was something you said, I want to hear more about what he said, but I'm not quite sure I understood it, or if you want to make your comparisons, the Dan Brink, Mary Griffith Show will be up and running this afternoon sometime around the 2 o'clock hour. We always encourage everyone to vote and to be involved in their community, and we certainly hope that that is what you are going to do. Again, we do welcome both Mike Trope and Linda Moore as guests on the Mary Griffith Show in the future. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk with Bob Havermail. Fishing for Freedom is in the very end of May, but they're already opening up registration and they need boaters. So listen up tomorrow. We'll tell you how you can be a part of Quincy's tourism economy.